Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News. Today is the 16th day of the Crystal Rabbit Moon of Cooperation, Seli, Root Chakra, Blue Lunar Hand Day. The affirmation is, I polarize in order to know, stabilizing healing. I seal the store of accomplishment with the lunar tone of challenge. I am guided by the power of self-generation. It's also Gregorian calendar, Monday, June 14th, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing most every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My lead-in music is the first cut Icos, short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry, off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia. If any of you would like to chat while we were on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Myra Smith, certified labyrinth facilitator, labyrinth artist, and owner of the Laughing Flower Labyrinth and Landscape Company. That's www.laughingflowerlabyrinth.com, providing rest for the soul in the busy garden of life. Thank you, Myra, for joining me today.
Thank you, Christiana. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I met you up in Bainbridge Island a couple of months ago.
Right, at the gathering.
Yes, and you were one of the workshop presenters. Can you tell us a bit about your background and how you were introduced to labyrinths?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I really am a former small-town girl from the South that moved to the Pacific Northwest about 18 years ago. I was born and raised in North Florida and had a very traditional Southern Methodist small-town upbringing, but kind of with a twist. I grew up during the 60s, and I had a working mom and a stay-at-home artist dad. And I grew up on a farm. That has been in my family for generations, so my grandmother grew up on the same farm. So from a very early age, I think I was connected to the earth and, the love of all things that grow. And so then from my small-town upbringing, I moved to another small Episcopal college in Tennessee. And then after graduating from college, moved out to the West Coast. So I was in a nonprofit human services work for about 10 years, and then started working at home after I had my children, and then discovered the labyrinth through a DVD that was put out by the Methodist Church called Living the Questions. And soon after viewing that DVD, that it had a very small, like, five-minute section on walking the labyrinth, and I was so intrigued. And then the next week, my neighbor invited me to walk a labyrinth on a Buddhist teacher's property. And I was so blown away by my experience on that labyrinth. I walked with probably a dozen women from different faiths. There were Buddhists. There's a Jewish woman, there were Christians, and we all had significant spiritual experiences as we shared after the walk. And so, in college I had studied philosophy and religion and was really more interested in the similarities between religions than the differences. And so I thought, oh, this is it. This is a wonderful thing that we can all do together and experience this together. So I was hooked. So I guess my first labyrinth walk was about 5 years ago, and then in 2008, a couple years ago, I went to labyrinth facilitators training and labyrinth building training and started my business last year. So that's kind of how I got from there to this point.
Have you taken formal courses in landscape design?
No, I haven't. Everything that I do landscaping-wise is things that I've, you know, read in books or learned growing up on a farm or have learned in my own backyard or from talking to friends or, you know, just different resources in the community, basically small community informational pieces. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's my main focus is labyrinth building.
Uh-huh. Do you have a labyrinth at your own home?
I do. I have a classical seven circuit labyrinth. It's it has brick fields and grass paths. And I'm in the process of building a chart labyrinth as well that's going to have bark paths and rock fields.
And the rocks, where are they going to be native to the area where you're? Now, where exactly do you live up in the Seattle area?
I'm actually north of Seattle, about 30 minutes south of the Canadian border in Bellingham, Washington. So I'm planning on using river rocks because I have quite a few of them in my yard. And my mission is to use what is available, and that's something I do with my clients as well, you know, help them find ways to reuse or recycle things that they already have on their property. So that I'm going to do that, kind of follow my own advice.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let me go backward because we're going to talk about this more. But let me go back to what you said before. You said you took Robert Ferre's labyrinth building course. What was that like for you?
You know, that was wonderful. Robert Ferre is just, he's so generous with his information and so encouraging to those of us who are new to labyrinth building. I took his training at Grace Cathedral after labyrinth facilitator training in 2008, and it really provided the nuts and bolts that I needed. I had already taught myself how to draw the classical labyrinth, which is a lot easier to do than the chart one. But I was really nervous to do the chart before the training, and then afterwards I felt like I had everything that I needed to know. And that's been something wonderful, I think, about this labyrinth community, is that everybody is so generous with their information and helping out others that are newer to the work.
I saw also on your website that you are a graduate of the Grantsmanship Center Strategic Fundraising and Grant Writing Programs. Have you used this training to obtain grants for some of your own projects, or projects that you that you were paid to do, or they you talked about it in your community or whatever? Have you ever done that before?
Mm-hmm. I took the Grantsmanship Center's trainings when I was working in nonprofit human services here in Bellingham. And, you know, so far those trainings have provided mostly big picture information for the projects that I've done. In that I'm able to help people see that they can find the funding if the labyrinth needs to be built. So, for example, with Project Labyrinth of Bellingham, I've worked behind the scenes to help them develop a strategic fundraising plan, kind of in an advisory, and that's been in a volunteer advisory role. I was president of their board for a time and served on their board and helped them build their temporary labyrinths. And that project will break ground on August the 2nd. We are very excited to have our first permanent labyrinth here in Bellingham.
And about how long did this grant writing proposal process take from start to finish?
Well, you know, it depends on the project. For Project Labyrinth, they started before I got involved, and then after I stepped back to work on my own business, they continued. So I think they've been working on it maybe 5 or so years. But it depends on the organization. You know, it could be, you know, for a church that may have different funding sources, or different funding cycles than a public space that relies on government funding and may take a little bit longer. You know, the timeline can vary from a year to 5 years, or it could be something very quick where maybe you have a major donor who is involved in your project and you know they're very committed and to your mission and your vision, and so you can just go and ask them for the money. So it's... as I said, the grant writing and the fundraising training, I hold that kind of in the back of my head always when I'm working with nonprofits, as kind of a, you know, you can do it. The funds are out there, and, you know, it's just the research and the sources varies depending on kind of what population they're serving and what the purpose of the labyrinth might be, whether it's healthcare setting or a religious setting or a public setting.
So I think this is a very germane topic for people wanting to provide labyrinths. And they're, you know, I hear it over and over again for facilitators. They always come up against the funding issue, whether it's within a church organization or school or even if they have an idea where they have a business of their own or a company that they want to start and provide workshops but need funding for materials and for, you know, for the running of that of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I this whole process of grant writing and where people start in terms of what do they start, what would you suggest that people do when they're looking, it's like, okay, I think I need to have a grant, I need a grant, we need money, we need funding, and where do you first put something down on paper first, do you first do research on the internet, what is your suggestion for people?
Well, my suggestion is always, as they start, to start with those that are closest to them. So, for example, with the Project Labyrinth of Bellingham folks, one of my first pieces of advice was to form an advisory group. And that group, you know, whether you're applying for a grant or you're doing a fundraising campaign or a special event, you need some, you know, wise people to kind of be your advisors, but also people that are connected both not only to your mission, but in the community. So, you know, to come up with some really good, and most of the time people are willing to serve in an advisory capacity. If all you're asking people to do is sit around and talk and give advice, most people are happy to give that. So that it's a real easy ask. And then from that point, those people, and I really do rely a lot on, and I'm learning, the labyrinth is teaching me too, to trust spirit in that, that the people that you need will say yes. And then as a group, you know, if the labyrinth needs to be built, if you have the right people, and you've got the right project, the money will follow. And I know I'm not being very specific, but I really do think it happens like that. The labyrinth is teaching me to trust, if you've found the correct what needs to be done, that spirit will help you provide the how.
Mm.
So then, you know, that's a jumping off point to, you know, you may need a fundraising professional to help you come up with a kind of a strategic plan that includes, you know, different pieces for different parts of the population. So if it's a hospital, maybe you've got a special fundraiser for the doctors, or you also have special sources of funding for, you know, from the healthcare area, but there also may be capital funds. So it just, it depends on, you know, again, what I call the three P's, the people that will be using it, the purpose of the labyrinth, and the place that it's going to be. Those are the three keys for clarifying not only who do you ask to be on your advisory board, but, you know, where do you go then for that funding?
Okay, well, you say on your website that you've created many labyrinths since starting your company. It's only been a couple of years. So what are some of the recent projects you've completed? You said the one in Bellingham, or it's about to be completed, but tell us a little bit about some other ones.
Sure. Well, one that was really fun for me, and I think the thing I love about creating labyrinths with people is that each one is different. So each one has a different creative process depending on, again, those three P's, you know, who's going to be using it, the people, the place it's going to be, and then the purpose that it will be used for. But one kind of interesting one that I got to work on was for a Unitarian Church in Des Moines, Washington, south of Seattle. And they found me on the Internet and contacted me, and they knew, and this rarely happens with me, they knew exactly what design they wanted. They wanted the Flaming Chalice Labyrinth, which was created by Bob Peach from Georgia. He's a Unitarian from Georgia. Well, I'd never built that labyrinth before. But, again, I knew it was a combination of the classical and the shark, so I thought, sure, I can do this. I can figure this out. And so through the process, we found Bob Peach. He has since disabled his website, so it was kind of hard to track down. But then once we found him, he was so open, again, and generous in sharing exactly how to build it and his design specifications. So then I just modified his design to fit the space they had available. So it ended up being a have you ever seen a Flaming Chalice Labyrinth?
I don't think, you know, you do. I thought to myself, what is that? No, I don't think I have. Is this labyrinth on the world and the labyrinth locator?
It is, yes. Yes.
A picture of it on there?
It now, yes, there is a picture of it. Well, it is, you know, as I said, it's a combination of the classical seven circuit, but then it has some extra turns in there to include some of the shark symbolism and the cross. But the center is a flame, and the bottom of it is a chalice. And I guess for the Unitarians, the Flaming Chalice has been their symbol. And you had Nancy Ayer on your program a couple of weeks ago, and she sent me all kinds of information about the wonderful symbolism of that Flaming Chalice. So we built it. We did it in one day. We had over 20 volunteers, and they had all the materials. I did a lot of it via email and phone, you know, figuring out how many materials we needed and for the gravel paths and how many pavers we needed, and working with the volunteer coordinator on all the logistics. So I just showed up on a Saturday morning, and she had all the volunteers there, and we just built it in a day.
Did you have to lay any kind of foundation?
You know, they did that before I got there, so that was wonderful. Her, the volunteer coordinator's husband, was also a landscaper, so he had built kind of a raised bed area and put down, oh my goodness, a lot of soil and gravel and things, and leveled it off before we got there. So when I got there, all I had to do was, you know, set up the measuring ropes and coordinate the volunteers.
And what? So the paths are gravel. Mm-hmm. The pavers are the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Are they butted up against one another? What's in between each paver? Is there anything, or is it sunk into the gravel? How are the pavers in there?
Well, we laid the pavers down just on top of the gravel, and then after they were all down, we put in more gravel on top so that the gravel was flush with the tops of the pavers. And then for the flame, we used some really heavy-duty plastic edging that we could cut so that we could fashion a flame shape out of it. And then we got red lava rock. So the gravel is gray, and the pavers were charcoal gray. And so the red flame really popped as a visual on that labyrinth. It turned out quite beautiful.
So that manipulative, the bendable plastic stuff, I've used it too. I used it up in Vermont. That is so because the flames, you actually have them curved, I imagine, because they're flames, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And is the chalice of the same charcoal gray as those are pavers?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And she was talking about filling that in with something different, but they hadn't quite decided that, so I left that for them to finish. So I'm excited to see what the final version looks like.
What's the diameter of it?
40 feet. Mm-hmm. So the paths, I think, were 2.5 feet wide, and the center, I think, was about 10 feet, 10 or 12 feet.
So this is wheelchair accessible, basically.
Yes, that's their plan. They were going to create a gravel path from their parking area up to the labyrinth. The labyrinth is in a meadow, probably less than 20 feet from their parking lot. So it will be very accessible, which will be really nice.
Okay, so give me the name of it. Is there a name of the labyrinth?
Sure. It's at Saltwater Unitarian Universalist in Des Moines, Washington.
And that's the same as Des Moines, Iowa, DESMOINES?
Mm-hmm.
Des Moines, Washington. And it's Saltwater Unitarian Church. All right. I'm going to look it up on the web. I'm very intrigued about what this must look like, the design. It must be very...
Mm-hmm. It was and the other, I think, other fun project that I've worked on recently was creating what I call the Living Water Trinity, which was three pieces of recycled appliance art. And it was for a local nonprofit called the Appliance Depot. And their mission is to recycle appliances, obviously, but they also have job training programs for people who are, trying to get back into the workforce and learn a skilled trade. So the only qualifications for this appliance art was that you use recycled appliance parts, and you could go to the Appliance Depot and sort through, all their bins of things. So what I decided to do was make three labyrinths, and they gave me there was a washer door and then two dryer doors to create on. So that was kind of my palette. And then I created labyrinths out of, the spiral stove elements and recycled knobs and broken glass and mirrors and things that I had because I was doing kind of a water theme. I was inspired by some music that I had been listening to, contemporary Christian musician, Garrison Doles, had this wonderful song that kind of inspired the whole thing. And then, so it was inspired by his music and also scripture and then insights from walking the labyrinth. And actually, I think it was Kay Knievy. At the Northwest gathering that we had on Bainbridge Island, was going to save the caps of water bottles from our gathering because they weren't recyclable. And that just gave me the idea, oh, I'm doing a water thing with my labyrinths. And so I asked her if I could have her water caps, and then I forgot them. But anyway, I ended up collecting some here in Bellingham and using those. But those were that was a really fun project, and the labyrinths turned out kind of funky because they're recycled appliance art. But as my mother-in-law said, they'll make good yard art.
So, okay, so wait, I'm trying to picture this. Each one of them, each one of the doors, the round door part, I guess to a front-loading washing machine and dryer?
Right, right.
The and round.
I bought heavy-duty
Each one of those was a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sorry, I didn't explain that very well. So the first one I made was a classical labyrinth, and then I made the chakra vyuha, and then the other was the shart labyrinth. So, and I called it the Living Water Trinity. So I had this heavy-duty epoxy that I glued, all the different pieces on. And they were, you know, of course I painted them first, so they're these wonderful shades of blue, which is my favorite color. So they were really fun.
Okay, so wait, I'm still got to ask some more questions. So so you painted the pieces, and each one were the three doors connected to one another, so they made one single sculpture?
No, they were separate. Three separate sculptures. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there so this labyrinth is on top of this door. Is the door flat on the ground or up a little bit? Are people looking at it, or can they actually take their finger and walk it because it's flat?
You know, I created it to be like a wall hanging or maybe a fence hanging in a garden.
Oh.
But, you know, you could run your finger along the paths. I think the paths were about an inch wide on all three of them. So they ended up being quite large. It was a lot of fun.
And what did you make the paths? So the paths were just the glass, just the metal?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the line?
Metal. The lines were various objects. I used water bottle caps and recycled stove knobs, which my members of my family painstakingly helped me to cut off and almost cut off a finger in the process. and I used, I did buy some new things because I wanted some shiny things on there too to remind people of water. So I had shiny bolts, and then I had some old broken, I saved broken wine glasses and used them for healing rituals on the labyrinth for people to carry with them as they're walking the labyrinth. So I had quite an assortment of broken crystal and blue glasses in kind of watercolors, because things that I tend to have on hand myself. So whenever I break them, I save them. So it was fun to put all those beautiful goblets that were broken, but I couldn't quite get rid of them, to some use. And then that was symbolic too of my Christian faith, the brokenness and the beauty arising out of the brokenness and that too. So.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. I really had to really explain it to me, because I had a hard time visualizing this, and I think of myself as a very visual person too. So,
well, if you're interested, or if any folks are listening in that are interested, I have lots of pictures on my Facebook page, which people can access via my website at laughingflowerlabyrinth.com.
Okay. So tell us a bit about the labyrinth workshops you've given. I mean, you were there in Bainbridge. What was the name of that workshop that you gave?
You know, I didn't give a workshop in Bainbridge.
Oh.
Yeah, I was just a happy participant.
You were one of the, yeah, okay. You know, I get to, sorry about that. I get them a little confused.
You
know
what?
Everybody a little confused.
I was helping Nancy hand out flowers. You may have thought I was helping her. I bet
okay.
That's what it was. Yeah. But no, I just showed up. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed all the workshops there.
Yeah. So what have you been doing recently with Labyrinth workshops?
Well, the most recent one that I did was for a parish nurse training at St. Joseph Hospital here in Bellingham. And are you familiar with the parish nurse programs?
No.
And congregations? No. Well, our church has one, and we're fortunate to have three parish nurses. But they basically provide health advice and like blood pressure screenings and cholesterol screenings. And like our parish nurses always have some sort of health or nutrition article in our monthly newsletter at our church. I know when my daughter got stung by a bee once on the weekend, and then on Sunday at church I was able to ask the parish nurse, oh, do you think I need to take her to the emergency room, because she got stung right between her eyes. And her eyes got swollen shut.
Oh, no.
So they're just a wonderful resource, a physical resource as well as spiritual resource for, you know, not only physical ailments but spiritual needs within the church. That's kind of a complement to, you know, the ministry that the pastor provides. But at any rate, we have a very healthy parish nurse program in Bellingham and Whatcom County, and they have a training at St. Joseph Hospital. I think they do it quarterly, and they invited me for the first time. It was earlier this spring to participate. So I have two canvas labyrinths. An 18-foot labyrinth and a 33-foot labyrinth that I can bring in and share with different groups. And so I brought my 18-foot labyrinth with me, and their training was for a whole weekend, so they got to walk it all weekend at the hospital. And then I just put together a PowerPoint presentation so that they could not only learn about, because these are nurses from various faith communities, all over, I think it was the I-5 corridor from Seattle up to Canada. But basically just provided information about labyrinths in general, and then Christian history of the labyrinth, and then some specifics on how they might use the labyrinth within their faith community to minister to the needs of their congregations.
I see. Now, do you have, do you know of labyrinths at hospitals up there, and or hospitals or rehab centers or anything up around your area?
You know, we don't have any public labyrinths in Bellingham. That's why we're so excited about the one in Fairhaven mm-hmm. Park that's going in. Mm-hmm. There is a rope labyrinth outside the Cancer Center in Bellingham that was put in as a temporary labyrinth 10 years ago. And I've been working with the director of the Cancer Center, and this is kind of where my fundraising piece comes in again. She really wants to renovate that labyrinth and make it more semi-permanent because they are mounting a capital campaign within a couple of years. And so she wants it to look nicer and be something that will, you know, be that their patients and their staff might use more often, because it's the rope is hardly even visible any longer. It's been there so long. So we've been working to gather donations. I've got bark donated and working on getting rocks donated, and we've gotten signage donated. So we hope to have a more accessible one at the Cancer Center soon. But other than that, that's it.
Mm-hmm. What was I going to ask you? I didn't ask you this before, but now I want to ask you, is the weather similar there? Is it colder up there than it is down here in the Portland area? And because do you have more consideration when it comes to laying a labyrinth in the ground there than you would here in terms of foundation and depth and freezing and you know bulging or anything like that?
No, I think our winters are pretty temperate, very similar to Portland. So, yeah, I think it would be quite similar considerations. Mm-hmm.
So you haven't had to deal with that very much up there
No.
when you've done other labyrinths?
No, I've had a couple of brick and grass labyrinths, a couple of bricks pop up because of moles or, you know, things like that. But it's very easy fixes. No freezing so far.
And what are some of the other materials that you've used to make your labyrinths with?
One fun one that we did for a temporary labyrinth was a rose and birdseed labyrinth. Mm. And that one was actually quite the process gathering all the roses. We decided to make it out of silk roses, and so basically I cut off all the stems and just poked the roses into grass, and then used birdseed to fill in with the lines. But it was finding affordable silk roses in great quantities was an adventure. So actually, after the International Labyrinth Society gathering in Portland last year, I drove there from Bellingham. I think it was a six-hour drive. So I think I hit nearly every Walmart. I did a Google search for Walmarts on the I-5 corridor. And my poor girlfriend that I dragged along with me to the Labyrinth Society gathering, we stopped at almost every Walmart on the way back to Bellingham because that that event was the day following my return from the Labyrinth Society gathering. That was fun.
Those are the cheapest roses you could find.
They were. So I'm actually going to recreate that labyrinth for a bed and breakfast in Everson, Washington. It's called Kale House. And it's just a lovely little retreat of a bed and breakfast. The Everson, if you've ever been to Whatcom County, it's kind of way out in a rural setting. And this bed and breakfast is just, they're totally unplugged. No internet access. I'm not even sure if they have a phone at the bed and breakfast, you know, where the guests stay. You can get that in town if you need it, but it's just completely unplugged. So it's going to be a perfect setting. They have a lovely garden, and we're going to recreate the rose and birdseed labyrinth on their lawn for a 15th anniversary. And that's next weekend, the 26th and 27th in Everson.
Was this a classical style?
A chart.
It was.
I made a seven-circuit chart out of the silk roses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So with all the workshops and the building, you must have some juicy labyrinth stories. Do you have any that you can share, you'd like to share about your this ministry and your work and you know all the people that you've met?
I thought about this question ahead of time, and I thought, well, I've used it for morning prayer, and I've used the labyrinth for problem solving, and I've used the labyrinth for creative inspiration, and definitely for healing. There's so many different stories I could share, but I think like a point in time story that I would love to share is just about the great joy that the labyrinth has brought me. And that was last summer. I went back to Grace Cathedral. My husband took me there for my 40th birthday to San Francisco for the weekend. And just so I could walk the labyrinth, because the Grace has just become kind of my spiritual home away from home. And it was early in the morning, and you know, if you've been there early in the morning, it's wonderful to see the folks that come and do their Tai Chi on the labyrinth.
Yes, yes.
I just love that. So there was a teacher teaching Tai Chi, and she had a couple of students. And they were just doing their graceful movements around the labyrinth. And so, it's about 6:30 or 7 in the morning, and I walk up to the labyrinth. And, you know, they were doing their Tai Chi, and I was walking the labyrinth. And it's like just as I came to a point in the path where they were, they would do another movement to kind of move out of the way. And I don't even know if they were even aware. Maybe they were, and they were just moving out of my way. But it just felt like a dance. Like, you know, they're doing their Tai Chi, I'm doing my prayers. We're doing kind of different things, but we're all on the same path. And I just loved that vision and that moment. But the other piece, you know, of the labyrinth, I remember walking that, and the first time I walked that labyrinth outside, you know, at the top of Knob Hill there, it just looked so perfect, and the gardens were so serene, and it was just wonderful. But this time, as I, you know, went back to walk the labyrinth again, I noticed there were lots of cracks in the labyrinth. You know, and Lauren Archis likes to talk about how you can use everything in the labyrinth as a metaphor. But just all of a sudden, I'm looking at these cracks and thinking, these cracks are beautiful. These cracks are so beautiful. And I almost started crying just with the emotion of it. But then I thought, well, this is just a metaphor for all the cracks in my life. They're beautiful too. And I just had this wonderful joy of, you know, the cracks are what make me beautiful. You know, there's, what's the quote about the cracks in your life or what lets the light shine in or something. Anyway, that's probably my most joyful moment on a labyrinth, was realizing all these cracks and hurts and things that had happened to me were beautiful and just part of the tapestry of my life.
Mm. Well, and the other thing is that as the labyrinth ages there, the physical labyrinth outside, especially the new one inside, is pretty spectacular, too, to walk. Mm. I'm sure you did that as well. But, you know, the patina creates a patina, and part of that patina, which is a part of our everybody's patina as we age, you know, we get cracks and we get wrinkles and we get, so it's part of that wonderful deepening of the physical form that is this patina that I think changes and gets more richer. Mm. I certainly felt the same way because I had walked it in 98 when I did my training there too. And it was a very, very powerful experience for me in a completely different way. And going back again and walking the brand new labyrinth inside and then walking the outside, I noticed also that it was aging well, let's put it that way. And all the cracks, people were still there and people were still practicing Tai Chi next to it. And it was still a mecca. It was still very much almost a vortex of energy there at the top of Knob Hill, with people very, very drawn to it and drawn to sitting and in contemplation meditation there. So, I had the same similar experience. Oh. What do you think about? We're almost finished with almost out of time.
Okay.
But what are you currently working on? Do you have anything that you want to tell everybody what you're working on in the near future or where they can expect to find you with labyrinth building or workshops?
Well, one thing that I think has been fun to do is I'm working on my Facebook page. I'm doing 50 labyrinths from 50 states in 50 days. And today, I think I was on day 14 in the state of Indiana. So it's just been fun to look at different labyrinths from all over our country as we, you know, head towards this Labyrinth Society gathering in Indiana, is that right, in November?
Yep.
So that's been fun. And then my next newsletter that's coming out, and there's an archive of my newsletters on my website, I think my topic is going to be pilgrimage because I was so inspired by using the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator on my last trip and how it really grounded me and made me feel like I was more than a visitor. I was more than a tourist. I was participating in a community. So I'm going to talk about that in my next newsletter and encourage people to use that Worldwide Labyrinth Locator as they go on their summer vacations this year. So if anybody's interested, the links to both those things are on my website. So I would love to have more people join in or send me labyrinths to include in the 50 States, 50 Days.
Well, thank you so much, Myra. Thank you for joining me today. I know it's my intention to enlighten labyrinth neophytes and support labyrinth veterans with guests like you who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So many, many blessings on your path.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the Live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me Monday, June 21st, when my guest will be Irma Haggis from Toronto, Canada, who blends labyrinths with teachings on the Akashic Records and does world labyrinth drumming on the solstice in Toronto. Please note this session will air at 12:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.